You know that feeling when a song comes on and it's so good that it feels like you're frozen in time? Well, that's what my podcast In My Tracks is all about. The songs that stopped me in my tracks. I'm your host, Jada Burt, and I have revealing conversations with musicians about their creative challenges, mental health struggles, and the economic realities they're facing as independent artists today. And you discover your new favorite songs. Tune into In My Tracks everywhere you listen to podcasts.
What is up, y'all? This is your girl, Scarlett, a.k.a. Scardi B, a.k.a. your resident emo historian. And join me as we unpack the history of Fall Out Boy and hip-hop. Look, y'all, we got a lot to cover in this podcast, so strap on in, because, sugar, we're going in. What is up, y'all? It is your girl, Scardi B, here from the Sugar We're Going In podcast, the only podcast about the history of Fall Out Boy and hip-hop, because y'all know the vibes. I'm really the only one to pull this off, okay? I am in my favorite era of Fall Out Boy dumb, which for a lot of people was a very scary, sad time, hiatus, but like so much came from hiatus that created the Fall Out Boy that we have today, and so many people were impacted by that. So I'm really excited. I'll be talking to some guests coming up, but we're covering Soul Punk, we're covering Trunk Wave, we're covering Patrick's solo career. And as part of that, I get the absolute pleasure to catch up with some really old friends that I got to make because I met them through Patrick and touring and Truant Wave and Soul Punk and all that good stuff. But today I've got, again, another great guest. I'm here with Tattoo Money, what? Songwriter, producer, composer, performer, fly guy, okay? Number one. You've always been so fashionable, but hello, Tattoo Money. Like,
it's good. It's good.
What did I miss? What? Tell the people who you are and what you're up to and who you represent.
What up, y'all? Tattoo Money from Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn, born and raised, independent. I like to say hip hop singer, songwriter, producer. Yeah. I make music.
I make music.
I love playing it. I'm super excited to be on this episode era because I'm with you. The whole solo side project era was like that song, What a Time to Be Alive, always comes to my head when
Speak
I think
on it.
Because it was the time, man. Like I finally think about that. Even like the Damn Thing shows and whatnot. I went to the first Damn Thing show.
Andy and Joe are getting all my love. Thank you so much.
At Knitting Factory in Brooklyn. So it's like it was an exciting time. And it was like it was quiet for a minute, but then like once it heated up and it was like, oh, this person doing this. To me, it's like I don't get how you can't be a fan and like not love this era.
Yes.
Because then when they got back together, you know what I mean? I know I'm jumping ahead.
This is it. Oh, baby.
You would hear Soul Punk in the new Fall Out Boy music. You would hear the Damn Things in the new Fall Out Boy music, especially the first album when they came back.
Oh, yeah. Save Rock and Roll. Absolutely.
Yeah. So to me, it was like, I agree with you. It was the formative. It was formative years for them, for the music that they made in the future. But it was just a cool last time. So I'm excited to be here.
I'm equally excited because I'm really like talking to people who are equally as big of fans and really like get it, like capital G-I, like trademark, like it means the world. But I love that you shouted out What a Time to Be Alive, because the first time I heard that, I was like, now Patrick, you know this, and this should have been all so fun.
Yep,
Stop playing with it.
Straight up. I was like, let him get this one in.
No, he was like, I had something left over. Yeah. Like, it might be like subconscious, but I was like, no, but be for fucking real. Like, that should have been on Soul Punk. I'm so excited because, again, I know you through Riot in Paris, which was the original act that I met you through when you opened for Patrick back in 2011. Talk to me about Riot in Paris. What do y'all sound like? What is the experience?
Yeah, so Riot in Paris was me and my partner Mercy. We were an alternative hip-hop group. And it's funny because we came up in another, I feel like, in New York, it was this golden era of, like, bands that sounded like us, forefronted by Ninja Sonic. Mm-hmm. Like there's videos of ASAP Rocky talking about being influenced by Ninja Sonic. I feel like don't get flowers enough, but they were like the forefathers of, if I can say it on here, as they called it, the alternative nigga scene.
Yes, absolutely. You can say whatever the fuck you want.
They used to be like, yo, we gotta call ourselves the alternative nigga crew. Like they were the forefathers of that. And like the Afropunk Music Festival was birthed from that scene.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so me and my partner Mercy, we were both hip hop artists, but I started falling in love with rock music very early on and influence went in that into the sound. And so pretty much how our sound came about was we were signed with Devo Springsteen, who was a producer from Good Music. And so we were kind of like loosely signed with a Good Music affiliate. And so, you know, the whole thing with Good Music and Kanye was soul samples, sampling soul music, chopping it up. That was their thing back then. And so with us, he was always like, there has to be something different. There has to be something different. What's different about y'all? And so for us, it started with, okay, if everybody else is sampling soul music, let's chop up rock music. And then so some of the first songs that we did, we would sample Arctic Monkey songs and Cold War Kid songs.
Ooh, Hang Me Up to Dry, the banger forever.
Hair Down, like a lot of our original, like first EP was all like chopped up rock stuff sampled. And then as time went on and we wanted to move away from sampling, we started adding more live instrumentation into it, playing stuff ourselves. And that's kind of where the sound came from.
I just fell in love with it right away. It is very New York. Like when you talk about like melting pot and you talk about like genre bending, like that's really what they called it back then, right? Now we know that like all the music that we love and that is genre bend, it came from black music black music. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, you know? And I think it was like also created as like marketing, right? Like when you can market to a certain sector of people, like it's a business. But at the end of the day, like it is the same exact thing all through. And your music, and again, and just that time is just like so critical, especially to like me and like my experience of music. But what's really special about you, and I did my research, okay, because what you might not remember, I mean, you probably do because you wrote it, is that your blog for Ride in Paris is a time capsule. I know you're hip and familiar and fans of Fall Out Boy because of your various blog posts talking about them, including remixing America's Sweethearts, okay? Yeah. So we're going to walk through some blog posts that I found.
Oh. Okay, here we go.
All right. This is November. For the most part, it's in order, but I felt like it was important to start it with this one. You go, Young FOB. This was posted November 11th, 2009 at 3:14 a.m.
That's probably when it dropped. That's probably what
I was up. But like the Jay-Z quote at the top already. Yeah. Anybody knows me knows that I'm a big ass Fall Out Boy fan. So I had to rep and show this video. The song Alpha Dog was first heard on Welcome to the New Administration mixtape they put out with Clinton Sparks last year.
Was fire.
It was pretty damn kick ass. I actually interviewed Clinton Sparks. It was great. I was really shocked that it wasn't on the new album Foley, but now that I listened to the album, I know the song didn't fit. But the good news is they're releasing it with their greatest hits album in a couple of weeks. This is the video. Patrick Stump is capital letters, the man, !5 of them, by the way, 3! So already, like, this is diving right into just like the love and appreciation. And I'm glad you brought up Alpha Dog. I was actually in Orlando the night that they did like the live debut about it this year. Yeah, no, I was sick in the head. I yelled, get familiar. Like, I was like, if you know, you know. And Pete had the audacity to introduce it by, you guys want to hear the last song we ever wrote before the hiatus?
Wow.
Sir, unsay that. Are you kidding me? Alpha Dog is very special. When he said, you're not the first or the last, but you're possibly the prettiest, I felt that.
The bars, man.
So good. So that was November 11, 2009. And in 2008, you put out a remix to America's Sweethearts. You're a huge Fall Out Boy fan, so it was an honor to remix this song. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. That same year, you gave Foley Adu number 7 on your albums of the year. And you said that this album was dope, underrated, was originally supposed to come out on election day, but they pushed it out. I was upset. This album is mean, though. It is one of the few albums I've ever heard, and it keeps getting better as it goes along.
I think Foley was a slept on album. And when I hear people, even when
not my 4 foot Foley poster right behind us. Like,
I don't get it. To me, honestly, this might sound crazy, but
no.
To me, every Fall Out Boy album is better than like the last. And I'm talking about even to when they came back. Like, yeah. I was still like, damn, still. Like,
no,
yo.
Because the audacity to have Burna Boy on their album in 2017 before anything really, like the foresight. Like, I keep saying it, like, Pete Wentz is the ultimate A&R.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he was the man.
So you gave Foley a 7, and then funny enough, when the Damn Things dropped their album Iconoclast, you also gave them your top, your number 7 album of 2010. You said this is probably my favorite or second favorite album of the year. 3 guitars, mind-blowing lyrics, not one slow song on the whole album. This is what rock and roll is supposed to be about. I just love finding these blog posts because this was literally my Tumblr. Like, it's so perfect. I promise you we're getting to the end. Here is one because I believe that y'all stopped the blog right around March of 2010. Okay. And this goes, this post is called Stump with 5 exclamation points, posted March 20th. And you go, I'm so geeked. I just checked out a video of Patrick Stump's performance at South by Southwest last night. I would have gave up one of my guitars to be at that show. Either way, besides the technical difficulties, the new song is dope. I've always been a fan of the one-man show. This one is sick. Dude is slimmed down crazy and reminds me of a young Rob Thomas with the song. Now this is it, now everybody. But you did say, I can't wait for the album. Enjoy. I also love that video. He's saying, I believe, like, the phone book and Spotlight. And actually, in my interview with him that I've either already played on the show or I'm about to, he says that sound guy was a total dick. And I've never heard Patrick say anything mean about anyone. And, like, he, like, ripped this guy. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. He can know. He sucks.
Listen, you work in the industry.
Oh,
half
yeah.
of sound guys are dicks.
Absolutely. Angels, hey, can you turn me up? They're like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
yep. If they pretend they know you.
Yep.
But I love that. So that was back in March 20th. This was like right when Patrick started debuting newer songs, the new look.
Yeah.
But what's really crazy and what my segue is that this was only a year and a month before you opened for him. Right?
Also, this is gonna sound messed up, but that one man performance that he did was one of the major reasons why I ended up going solo.
Wow! No, inspiration is inspiration, whichever way you spin it.
I was like, yo, I got to do it.
You said you D12'd my band yourself.
I was like, yo, because as you see the post right there, I was like, yo, I love the one man band thing, and then seeing him do it there. I was like, nah, I gotta put out this solo album.
And no, yeah. It's so important. Look, again, inspiration is inspiration, however it shakes. But what I'm saying is that this blog post a year and about a month before you opened for him, and then after that, Patrick blogged about you.
That was crazy.
Let me get this. Let me get my Patrice voice on. No, I'm kidding. I'm not gonna do that. He goes, it's no secret that I have been vehemently. Man, I'm so foreign. I'm going to just let that one rock.
Let it go.
This is anti-POC. The whole thing just felt like a contrived means of publicly patting yourself on the back for walking up while embracing the fact that you don't even have to get out of bed to do so. After much discussion, and I gave most of the credit to D.A. Walsh of Chester French.
Yeah.
I realized that perhaps I have been focusing exclusively on the bad and missing out on the very real opportunity to connect with people in ways I hadn't before and to experience art that I wouldn't have otherwise. So it was that I heard Ride in Paris. They randomly tweeted me. I followed the link and my curiosity was rewarded with a band so simpatico with my taste as to feel like the answer to a pop culture prayer. That's backstage right. In New York, I was struck by how genuinely sharp these cats were. They know their stuff from music theory to guitar settings, but on stage, all that intellect and preparation gave away to pure, enjoyable music. That's the way to do it. How does it feel hearing that?
I've done just overall with being invited in Paris and being connected to like Kanye, and I've done a lot of cool stuff. Opening for Patrick to me is still the highlight of my career.
Yeah.
And I've spent time in Kanye West's house. Opening up for Patrick Stump was the highlight of being invited in Paris.
First of all, you totally could have just like spooked and scammed them, because this man was clicking any and all links sent his way. First of all, like, Patrick would have gotten hacked for Bitcoin in no time if he was still on Twitter. But it goes, and even Hollis, we'll talk later, but just about opportunity, right? So you randomly tweeted a link and he clicked it. So what do you remember about getting the gig?
I remember vividly. So he had, it was either the day before that. All right. His music was circulating, and, you know, I'm in music. So the day before that, he had tweeted, what are some good local bands you think I should check out? And in my mind, I'm immediately like, yo,
he's on tour.
He's looking for openers. Yeah. So I think I immediately tweeted, if not that day, the day after, I immediately tweeted, yo, my band, obviously I was professing my love. I'm like, yo, bro, I love your stuff. Check my band out. And I remember I was standing in front of my MacBook practicing a guitar. And I remember hearing a notification on my Twitter. And it said, Patrick Stump is following you. And I'm like, what? And then I get a DM, you guys are rad. I'm going to get my management on it. And I remember like, yo, that was it. Like, I remember this shit vividly. And
wow.
What? And then so I hit my partner, Mercy. I'm like, yo, guess what? And then from there, so at that time, we had management that worked in the Def Jam as well. So not on the same floor, not because, you know, they were part of Island. Yeah, Island was part of Def Jam. But we had management that worked in Def Jam as well. And when I say that, it's like somebody who was a manager but was probably like an intern or assistant over there, but they were our manager. Yeah. But we had them pushing the issue over there. So we were getting feedback like, yo, you talk to these people, is this really going to happen? That's what I remember vividly with that day, the quick response and the follow and then the DM. And, yeah, we chatted a few times with DM, like real short after that. And then it was showtime.
It was showtime. And a big show at that. It was like his debut residency at Joe's Pub. He was doing 3 days in April. I remember, shout out to Jeff at school. He lent me $20 so I can buy tickets for one of the nights that I didn't have. Back when you can buy a ticket to go see Patrick Stump for $20. 20 tall hairs, okay? Plus a minimum of 2 drinks, but that's neither this nor there.
Joe Pub was making it a $50 night, man.
Oh, easily. And then, so knowing the crowd and being a fan yourself, like, how did you prepare this set? Like, was it any different than any usual, like, Ride in Paris set? Or did you kind of go in it being strategic, you know, maybe trying to understand the crowd a bit and being a fan yourself?
We went into it a little more strategic because, if I remember originally we were only going to have, like, a really short set. And then I guess he stepped in and got us longer time. I think it was something like that where we're like, we were super hyped for the show. And then like, oh, yo, you only got like 2 songs. And we was like, damn, I'm like, but screw it. And then by the time the show day rolled around, I remember we had like a full set. But I remember that. Because I remember we were going to have a full band. And then they told us that it was going to be a shorter set. So we didn't have a full band.
Yeah, you just did tracks.
Yeah, and then they said, no, you are going to have a longer set. So then we did have a full band.
Because I was tight up there on stage.
Yeah. But even all of that, like, I remember all of that stuff, like, vivid. Like, oh, this is what I remember going into it. At this point, nobody had seen him play live before of the new music. So, you know, we doing our thing, and young and egotistical, we like, yo, we opening for him. We going to murder this shit, yo. We going to outsound Patrick Stump. And I remember seeing his set on the side of the stage, and we was like,
oh, fuck, yeah.
And it was so many vivid memories from that day. Like, I remember coming in, and we got on the stage to sound check, and it was all of his band stuff.
And Matt Rubano on a guitar.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? And it had some dope equipment. And so, you know, like, with us, we were like, all right, we got to set our stuff up. And I remember he had this amp, like as a guitar player, that I was fiending to play. And we were setting our stuff up, and we were like, well, where's our stuff going to go? And he's like, why don't you just play my amp? And I'm like, what? I'm like, that one? He's like, yeah. And I was just so hyped because it was like, one, it was his. Two, it was this amp that, like, I couldn't afford, but I was fiending to play, and he had it. And obviously for them, it was a smart play because they're like.
It was the amp that Dance Dance bought.
Right. And it was just like, obviously it was easier for them to leave their stuff up. So that was super cool. I remember walking.
Yeah, a line share like that is kind of like very rare.
Yeah.
It's very rare, you guys.
Yeah. I remember
when you're advancing, you're like, nope, don't touch my shit. Don't look at it. Don't even like.
Yeah, no, his whole band let us all use all of their stuff. And I remember that vividly. I remember like the thing in Vlog where he was talking about like them knowing their stuff about like technology and guitars and all that. That hit me because that was all conversations with me and him. I don't know where my partner was at the time, but like
not there.
Yeah, I don't want to say, but like all of those remarks in that blog was about the conversations we had backstage before the show.
Yeah,
and I remember being back there, and I'm talking to him, and what he's talking about, we were talking about stuff like in-ear monitors and stuff like that, because like with Riot in Paris, we always tried to present ourselves as like a major, you know, so like we would always. In-ear monitors very early in the career, projection, visuals. So I think he was just blown away by the fact that we're playing with in-ear monitors too, and we're using the same equipment. So we were talking about that. We were talking about guitars. And I remember being back there, and I'm like, yo, I'm talking to him. And while I'm talking to him, I'm like, yo, a year and a half ago, I was in the crowd at Mohegan Sun Arena watching you perform. And now we're backstage talking about in-ear monitors and guitar tuning. I remember that so vividly, and I just thought how crazy it was. And I remember the space boots.
Oh, babe, let's talk about the space boots.
Yeah.
Yo, y'all weren't there. The man's had a Louis Vuitton belt. Yeah. With his space boots on, the fingerless gloves.
Yep.
Doing for all sure.
The lights and for the cover song.
Doing all of the lights, doing a medley of all of the lights and brush his shoulders off.
Yep.
He did like a medley of of Ain't Nothing But a G Thing.
Yeah, they was.
Oh, dude, no, he murdered. And it was just so intense. And what I love that you brought up the in-ears, did you know that he still uses his Soul Punk in-ears?
Yeah.
Like, on stage for Fall Out Boy now? Yeah, it's very cute to see. Like, somebody, like, got, like, a good, like, HQ shot, and were like, what do his monitors say? And they go, SP, which are 100% the ones
that he used
for that tour. And I was like, we love a frugal king. But you know he loves it. I was like, he's rich for a reason. Like, he's not just out here spending crazy cash.
Right.
But what a special time. Yeah, the outfits were fly. Everybody looked crazy. It was Scooter Warner on the drums. Mikey,
his band was crazy.
Michael Day on guitar. Matt Rubano on bass.
Casey Benjamin was
Casey motherfucking Benjamin.
Like, our bass player is like a renowned like music, like New York scene gig guy. And so, you know, he was doing the gig for us. But when he saw Casey Benjamin, he's like, holy shit, Patrick Stump
has Casey
in his band?
Yeah.
He's like, whoa. So we were all blown away, man. Like, playing the set was fun. And I remember coming backstage, and it was the juxtaposition of we were these black kids who played this rock set. Like, I don't know why. It was like the distortions were the highest. And even when we came backstage, somebody said, he was like, damn. That was a really hard rock set. And then they come out and the white man come out and do the most soulful.
Yep.
Soulful music ever. So it was cool that it was like.
The spirit of Bobby Caldwell took over him heavy that night for sure.
Ass off.
Well, that's Patrice. That's what I tell everybody. I was like, when he's singing, that's Patrice. That's not Patrick anymore.
Yeah.
And like what I talked about in some other like interviews and even the show, I was like, we have an R&B singer who's in a rock band.
Yep. Straight up.
You know what so I love that that's really what you remember from the night, because that was one of my first, if not my first Patrick shows. And then I went to like 15 of them after that. But it was research and development. It was all research and development for now. But it was very, it was really inspiring just kind of looking back and being like 95% of his openers were all black artists.
Like in Philly, he had Don T, who's an amazing singer, songwriter, and Questlove's sister. And he also toured for a very long leg of the tour with Winter Gordon, who now goes by Diana Gordon, who is the singer on Drive Me Crazy with Will Yachty.
Oh, shit, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I have pictures of Winter or Diana Gordon from like back in 2011 because she was opening for Patrick, you know? What do you remember about the crowd's reception? Like what'd you think about going in versus like what was your reception leaving it?
Well, one thing I remember was the seats.
Oh, yeah, the comedy club seats.
Yeah, because even...
blew mine.
He asked me when we came off the stage. He's back there, and I'm like, why are you nervous, bro? You're you. And he's like, how was the crowd? He was like, is it weird with the seats? And I'm going to be like, nah, it's not weird with the seats. But in my mind, I'm like, it was weird.
It's weird with the seats.
I remember a couple of things about the crowd. We were so much in a zone.
Yeah.
That we were like, I don't remember too much about it, but I do remember there was somebody wrote a blog post and they hated us. And that's one thing I remember. They said my pants was too tight. This is like 15 years later. You could tell I still remember.
That's crazy.
They said the only thing cool about us was our bass player. And I'm like, damn, he wasn't even in the band. He loved it though. I mean, we joked about it. It was mad.
Yeah.
He was like, see that? they were like, we were on too long, but I get it. I'm like, yo, yeah, I came here to see Patrick. I feel you. You know,
but also white man gave me platform, so exactly. I'm gonna take it.
Exactly. But no, we got a lot of love from that.
Yeah.
Even like from him, like I remember like when he did the Webster Hall show, we had seen him and he was like, hey, I've been talking to my management about you guys. And we were like, what? So we got a positive response from that. It just me, obviously, I just remember somebody ripping us on a blog.
Yeah, of course, because you always remember the haters instead of everything else.
It was somebody's random Tumblr. I was just like, yeah, I remember that.
Man, fuck that.
But I remember the crowd was super chill. The crowd was super chill and super cool. And I always felt like the biggest takeaway for me from that experience was I always said, when I make it, I want to be as nice of a celebrity as Patrick Stump is. That was my biggest take from any interaction with him was like...
I always say that like Patrick doesn't know that he's Patrick Stump.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
He knows he's Patrick. He doesn't know that he's Patrick Stump.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And to
me... And that was actually my next question. Like, what was it like working with them? Like, what'd you expect versus like what'd you get? Like, what stuck with you?
He was chill. His band was always super chill. Again, what stuck with me was not only his niceness to us, but to the fans. It was either that show or the Webster Hall show. I think it was that show. And they were trying to kick him out. And he's like, I'm not leaving.
Yep.
So, you remember, right?
Each and every person got a picture, got an autograph, got to call their cousin that really likes Fall Out Boy and wanted a shout out. Like, each and every person left there with ample time to talk to him.
Yeah.
So, All three nights. And by night three, like, William Beckett from the Academy Is had rolled up. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah. So that stuck with me. But I feel like a lot of them were like that when, when they all had the hiatus, they forgot that they were like megastars. I remember even, when they were doing the Damn Things, Joe and Andy started a record label. And we sent them music and told them, hey, we opened for Patrick a couple of months ago. Check out our stuff. And I could tell Joe responded to the email. He's like, this music is great. He's like, but we're like a small independent label. I wouldn't know what to do with it. He's like, but I'm sending it to my management. Which for us, we were feeling the sign of Crush Management. We were feeling like that was we do Crush Management.
Shout out to Crush Management. Yeah. You got two folks right here, number one fans.
Straight up. So even like he didn't have to do that. You know what I mean? So it was like it was something about how like they just removed themselves from the megastardom that they were and were like super chill during those moments. But yeah, man, that to me was just that was a great time, yo. Like I said, the fact that dude just I sent him a link on Twitter.
Yeah.
He responded.
Got him.
And he's like, you guys are rad. My management is on it. Like, he listened and was like, these guys, boom. And then the interactions day of, the interaction the next show when he invited us out. He didn't want to invite us out and got us tickets to the Webster Hall show.
Yeah.
And even then, like years later, I would hit him up on Twitter for like advice, music advice.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what do you think about this? And it's so funny because him being him, I would ask him a question and get an essay back.
Oh, yeah. And back when like even DMs had like a character limit,
yeah.
I remember like I knew something was coming when he was like one. And then it'd be like two,
yeah.
And he'd like number what's coming through. And I was like, oh, we're at 12, hon. Like, are we good? Like, can I say, that's great.
I didn't answer my question, but I'll take it.
No, dead ass. You're like, I will watch that movie. I love that. And so you ended up listening to Soul Punk and Truant Wave, right? So, like, what were some of your favorites from it? Like, what were some songs that stuck with you? And why is it Lupe Fiasco's a verse in this city?
Allie was one of my joints.
Yes.
What was the first song on so Porcelain? Like, just
yes.
When it started. Oh, man. It's just so many. Like, listening to that album makes me sad because I feel like I need another one. And
yeah.
I feel like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm the type of person that's weird. Like, if an artist or somebody passes away, I can't listen to their music anymore. I know it's weird.
No, I kind of get that. Like, where it's like you almost mourn what mm-hmm. could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I loved Amy Winehouse. Loved. And then once she died, I could never listen to Back to Back.
Oh, because it's just tragic,
yeah.
You know?
And so, like, Soul Punk, although I throw it on every now and then, it's like I'm still waiting for that one day.
I'll be going crazy on Soul Punk.
They have to be Soul Punk too.
I know everybody wants somebody hates to see me coming. Like, I know, like, Bad News for Run Dry and Cryptozoology, I woke mm-hmm. up. Like, I'm mm-hmm. coming straight for it. Like,
I still walk around like, I don't have to
prove myself to you. Impress me. Good luck.
Yeah, still this.
No, he put his foot in it. He put his entire foot in it. We love it. And I loved, I just really loved Truant Wave, obviously, because it was, like, our big introduction to, like, what was coming. But Omos Keith on Cute Girls of Sara.
Mm-hmm.
We had Chester French, D.A. Walsh for doing Big Hype, but I think that either that was supposed to be Childish Gambino or Nicki Minaj was supposed to make an appearance on that EP.
Mm.
Two more things. Idris Elba sings on Big Hype.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Also, where's the picture? I would like a picture of them both. Thank you. And then it was engineered in part by Sid from Odd Future.
Yeah.
Because of like Odd Future and Omos and like all them working together. Isn't that insane? I have a really good picture of him with all of Odd Future. And he looks like that meme where it's like, white guy, you're all right. Like, it's really, really good. But it was just, you know, that EP and then plus like what Soul Punk was. I think that predictions for things that'll never happen. If he were to put out another solo record, it would be like more Glasper. Like, I think he would go full like math jazz with it, the way that he would have kind of like made it adjacent to Soul Punk with using like synths and like mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah. You know what also, you know what I loved about Soul Punk?
Everything.
To me, I don't know. I don't want to say he was more confident. He was more flashy, I feel like. You know what I mean? And it was
when I turned 27, I was like, I understand whatever you are going through right now. I finally get it.
So it's like if you were an OG Fall Out Boy fan, and like even though he was the front man,
who the fuck is this?
Yeah, but you was like, yeah, Patrick, go ahead with your blonde hair and your space boots on. I was like, yo. So it was like
he was moving. I was like, okay.
That I enjoyed. Just as a fan of him as a
human. Yes.
Also, just sonically, like, to me, like, as a producer, to me, I don't know, man. I feel like, I'm going to blame it on the record label. I feel like they dropped the ball with him. Because to me, when that album came out, after that, he was poised to be producing for everybody in that building. You know what I mean? Like,
I told Travi to tell Patrick that James Blake and Jack Antonoff came and ate his lunch.
Yeah.
Because he was just ahead of it. But, yep. like, who else was working with Lupe and Tyga and, like, all of them making this?
Yeah. Still to this day, I would drop everything to produce an album with him. Like, so
much. You heard that, Patrick? Because I know you listen to every episode of Scardi B's Sugar We're Going In.
Yeah, damn right. Yo, bro. Yo, bro.
Yo, speak to him. He's Yo, listening bro. Right now.
I drop everything. Let's go.
Everything.
Let's go.
Ominous.
As in I got the stuff to drop.
Yeah. You're a little busy too as an artist. No, now he got that Disney money. He going crazy.
Yeah. He's a genius.
Happy for him.
He's a genius. And I really feel like, I don't know. I feel like there was a major fumble in the success of that album. Yeah. It was a classic. And I feel like, I don't know. But like what he was set up to be from that, whether he wanted to or not, was he would have been Bruno Mars before Bruno Mars.
Ooh. In a sense, speak like, on it.
Writing for everybody, producing and providing those hits for everybody. To me, that's what he was setting up to be with that album.
He ended up writing for Bruno Mars and then went on tour and opened for Bruno Mars while he was still doing the solo stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just really funny how Bruno Mars became famous for that picture of him looking back at Pete, real surprise. Mm-hmm. And then went to working with Patrick. I was like, let me know that Bruno's a car crash heart. Let me find out.
Yeah, I believe it.
That's so funny. Yeah, I again just like love reminiscing on this because it's like it was albums like Foley and then right at that same time, you know, The Roots and Pharrell and Neptunes, like Seeing Sounds, I think, came out right around that time. Like it was just so different, but like it just felt so right. And I remember in 2009, I think one of my favorite lineups that I'd ever seen live was Motion City Soundtrack opening up for NERD. At Rutgers Festival. Yup.
Wow.
Yup. So I was like, oh.
NERD is a big influence too, man.
Is huge. Have you seen the new Pharrell movie, Lego, Piece by Piece?
I haven't seen it yet, because I'm mad at him, finally. I was called.
Oh, wait. What's the tea? Wait.
In my head, but I'm mad at him for the shit he was doing with Chad, man.
Oh. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah, that shit broke my heart.
Relationships are relationships. Yeah. Or relationships are relationships.
That shit broke my heart. I'm like, come on, bro. No. No.
How has that time in music influenced what you do now?
Still to this day. I mean, I still follow the blueprint of Pharrell production. I'm still influenced by rock music. It's just now more I'm influenced by newer artists too. Like I'm not one to always, I'll openly admit new artists influence me.
And
I just think it's about how you use influence. I think some people use influence as, I want to sound like so-and-so. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where for me, it was always, I want to sound as original as so-and-so. Or I want to make people feel the way that song made me feel. You know what I mean? So rock music will always be an influence for me, especially in the guitar world. Like, I wouldn't be playing guitar and hip-hop if it wasn't for rock music. To be honest, if it wasn't for Incubus, if it wasn't for going to these shows and being front row and looking down at the singers or the guitar players' pedal board and being like, that's that pedal that make that sound? Let me go and get it. You know what I mean? So alternative music and just rock music or any stuff like that is always going to be a part of the music that I make because that's what I listen to. And I feel like that's what takes me so long to release music these days is because it's always like, how do I honor all my influences? You know what I mean? Like, how do I honor the fact that I love Grime and Bon Iver on the same song? You know what I'm saying? Like, how do I honor the fact that I love Ed Sheeran's songwriting and I love, you know, whatever, Idols at the same time? Mm-hmm. And it's about, you know, melding those influences together. I feel like that's everything. I mean, we're all influences. We're influences of our mothers and fathers put together. Yeah. So, you know.
And our growth influences them. Exactly. You know, if they could, we can. And I think we were talking right before we recorded, but it's like, it's just never too late. It's never too late to try. It's never too late to be different. It's never too late to, or there's just like, it's not criminal. Like influence isn't criminal. And I feel like a lot of people, maybe their own insecurities have them shy away from admitting to influences, but it's like influences are beautiful. Like what wouldn't you give for someone to be like, yo, that influenced me. Like something that you did will like stick with me and like will stick with other people. Like that's legacy shit, you know?
Exactly.
I love it. So what are your final thoughts about that time? Like when you think back on opening for Patrick in just 2011, like what are some final thoughts about it?
I mean, that time, I guess also mainly like the conversation and about what, you know, your podcast is about. One of the things I think about the most is like my band. And I think we would talk about this on the side to my band and who we were catering to at the time. And I feel like in retrospect, it was such a mistake because in our minds, we're like, we're black. We already got the black people. Let's make sure we get these white folk. You know what I mean? And I feel like in over the years, I've learned that minorities are the tastemakers.
Yep.
First, period. You know what I mean? It's like, I always say, like, minorities make stuff, and then, like, it trickles down, and everybody else tries to copy it, and then white people make it kind of whack.
You know what I mean? Like, once it hit, like, that's what I call whatever, or punk goes cronk, I was like, come the fuck on.
Yeah, and like, I feel like the mistake we made was that we were like, you know, like, we genuinely loved rock music and hip-hop music, and we pushed too much to get the Caucasian.
Persuasion, the caucasity of it all, yes.
I mean, I feel like we should have just focused on our people, and then it would have trickled down to the
Caucasian. The tastemakers.
Yeah, because we are the tastemakers, and it's like, you know, I'm willing to publicly admit that on camera. You know what I mean? I gotta come to peace with it myself. You know what I'm saying? I'm not perfect. Yeah. I just remember we would have like arguments about this, and we would have conversations where it would be like a hip hop blog or whatever would want to interview us, and I'm like, no, we already
because we're not hip hop. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to be. Let's try to get so and so. And in retrospect, I'm like, we should have went full Negro, man. we should have went full. We should have because then we would have shows where we would go to straight up hip hop shows and pull up with the guitars and shit like that, and people would love it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But then when we would try to get on a rock show, they'd be looking at us like we wasn't.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So, but that time, like I said, to me, the that whole era and opening for Patrick was still one of the highlights. It was my highlight of being in that group, period. And still one of the highlights of my career, just from the experience of it, from seeing how somebody who's at that level can be so humble and how they made their fans feel. And also just like I said, his artistry, I wouldn't be like, if you come to my live shows now, it's a one man band project. Yeah. And like I said, seeing him at them South by Southwest clips, like pushed me to do that.
Yeah. Fuck that sound engineer. But Patrick, you did the thing.
and the rope-a-dope about it was after that, he never did a one man. He never did one man band ever again. So, like, I saw that. I was like, I want to do that. And then after that, he went and got, like, a 20-piece band.
You carried it, though.
So he got me. But, nah, that era is influential in me, who I am now. And it would always be just because, I mean.
I love that so much.
I can't imagine. Let me ask you, are there Fall Out Boy fans you know who, like, don't know about that or don't fuck with that era?
Yes, and they're older now, and I think that they have a lot more appreciation for it. You know, we talked offline about like how kind of like the before the internet was what it is today, which is like, you know, a place to initiate diversity and kindness at times. The language was hate. People, it was easier to hate on something different and have an echo chamber about people who wish shit stayed the same. But I think a lot of people who hated Foley, who hated Soul Punk, who didn't get it, are understanding like why it happened. You know, maybe they were my age, you know, young and, you know, just wanting their little baby band back. But a lot of it has just come from, you know, growing up and like, again, seeing it from the other side and seeing what influences are today. I think what we see a lot more are people like me who are like always like shouting about the shit from the rooftops, but like finally feeling like I'm finding my echo chamber and that I can connect the dots. And that's really what the show's about, being like, this has always been some type of piece of me. And like, I'm finally having the words, vocabulary and experiences to put them together. I mean, call me the reach queen, but like, I enjoy doing it so much, specifically for stories like this, for us having known each other now, what, 14 years, and being able to keep in touch with each other and see each other grow, because a lot can happen in 14. That's half of my life. You've known me for about half, a little, yeah, about half of my life.
That's crazy.
Let's do it again.
Yeah. Well, also, again, I don't get a chance to really fan out. even like the music people I know, when I talk about this album, they're like, wait, he did a solo album?
No, like, yeah, don't talk to me. Yeah,
so
don't talk to me.
The fact that I can talk to somebody and fan out about it is just, it's just
any time. And here's a real fan out moment. Soul Punk is actually being re-released this year. So this comes out in 2025 this year through a Smart Punk Records out of Florida. So there will be a Soul Punk vinyl repress. Exactly. I mean, I have all my OGs. I have all my OGs. I've got the singles. I've got Saturday Night Again, like This City on like a 45. Like it's, I'm sick. I'm pretty sick.
He got to do a show.
I know.
I know he won't, but.
You know what's crazy? So during, we were talking also off camera about like this era of Fall Out Boy that we're getting, right? The Fall Out Boy Eras Tour. What's been crazy, and I don't know if you know this, but Patrick gets to do a piano medley in the middle of
Alley, right?
He's done Bad Side of 25.
Yeah.
He's done Alley. He's done Spotlight. And the bitches me go crazy. Like, and what's insane is that the night of Easter, they were playing in Nashville, and obviously I was there because I'm a heathen. And so I'm there, and he plays Spotlight that night. And it just felt like extra special because I was like, damn, like I remember like being up in front of the stage, like hearing those songs. And that was the same night that Casey Benjamin passed. And it was just really surreal, like reminiscing while I was hearing this song live and then leaving the venue and being like, he 100% did it. No, like, because there's no way he would have gotten through that if he was. But I was also like, the timing. Yeah, and then the next time they performed, he did like dedicate it to Casey, and also did Michael McDonald's What a Fool Believes, or the Doobie Brothers What a Fool Believes, because he said that Casey always said that he should cover that and he never got the chance to.
Oh, that's dope.
So yeah, rest in peace, sweet sweet Casey Benjamin. I think I'm gonna do a little mini episode on him. I think between him and like Robert Glasper and like everything else that he's done, he's just a cool guy to know. So man, he gave so much influence. Yeah,
that's
isn't
an interesting
insane
story, man. Because like I know, I'm sorry, I'm making you run long, but
no.
I know Robert Glasper. When I first heard of Robert Glasper, he was the keyboard player for Bilal.
Yep,
that was it.
I'm from Philly. You cannot literally flick a booger without being like, I played for Bilal. I'm on tour with Bilal. I was in the rooms.
Oh yeah, no, I love Bilal. Every time Bilal would play New York, I would go every time.
Yeah, it's a crazy show.
And so Robert Glasper, for years to me, was the keyboard player slash producer for Bilal. And for him to be where he's at now blows my mind still. Because I'm like,
have you seen him and Patrick do a Supermassive Black Sun?
No, you got to send me the link.
Oh my God. Probably like 2010, 11, that they did it together for like the iTunes Festival. It will make you cry. It will make you cry. It's really amazing. And I love Patrick on Black Radio too, because obviously who doesn't love Patrick stomping Common on a fucking track together? Like, let's talk about it. And then during the intro where like all the guest stars are kind of like, you know, singing a little like riff or something, he goes, I never get to do shit like this. Like, it's like my heart. Please.
It was just fast, man.
so good. And it's again, like, this whole thing is just trying to give him his flowers and trying to give you your flowers and trying to give all these artists that just were so kind to me. Again, like, we stayed in touch. I've interviewed you for my fashion, my fashion gig when I used to do that. And I feel like we've lived 30 lives, but like have picked up like it's been just yesterday. And you know, let's celebrate each other while we're here.
Hell yeah. I mean, especially you, like, just seeing like your journey. Like when I was setting up just now, I was telling my girl about the podcast, and I'm like, yeah, she's 100% going to be like a big time exec one day. And it's just cool to see you go, and it's been steady progress. That's why when you said it was 10 years at the other place, I'm like, really? I'm like, but yeah, like I
was loading.
I see the Grammy stuff. I see everything. And it's just dope to see you progressing and helping other artists. And it's just cool to see somebody. It's weird because everybody says they wants to do stuff, but it's cool to see somebody say it and then do it.
Fuck yeah.
And it's not that, it's crazy because it's not that common. You know, people say they want to do stuff, but it's like, you did it. There's this Everett Brothers song, and the lyric is mass simple. It's like, decide what to be and go be it. And it's not that easy, but you literally took that lyric and you said, I want to be this. Boom.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm being who I didn't get to see. Thank you. Like, and you know, I love that you said that, because that's actually part of like some advice that I give artists is like, yo, there are billions of people on this earth, hundreds of millions that have ideas and dreams, maybe thousands that like go into motion to making them happen. But the percentage of people who do is so tiny. Yeah. Be part of the people that do. So I really love that. And I feel like we both are just like chasing that. And like, I think that's what's going to keep us young forever and fly and cool. And talking about Fall Out Boy 14 years later.
Let's go.
I'm going to catch you at a show. Stop. Don't play with it, because the pits, they got me, but I'm in. I literally pulled a nerve last time, like last summer when I was in the pit. But like, yeah, it was worth it, because we heard Pavlov live. And that was the first.
I took out for that too.
Yeah. I'm taking 9 weeks of physical therapy for that. So yeah, no, dead ass. I was not ready. But like, what a pleasure it is to like, you know, see you progress as a person and an artist, but like also to see how they get older and just like infuse more of like everything that's ever happened into their music and into who they are. Like, I feel like I could have never dreamed of this era, you know, happening. And same dope. Thing for us. I never thought of myself at 30. I was like, yo, if I make it to 18, nice. Like, doing great, you know? And now at 30, I'm like, what a privilege it is to be alive. We're what they call hood old. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, where it's like, if you made it past 19, like you were like a Victorian era man. Like, you were like, I must have babies and pass at 30, because I'm it's my midlife crisis at 19.
Back in my day.
Yeah, back in, it's like, you mean 94? Like, what are we talking?
Straight up.
Yeah, but what a pleasure. Tell the people where to find you.
You can find me. It's going to sound... Google Tattoo Money, and I come up now, finally. After
period! Yes! We love a good Google panel. Are they using good photos?
Yeah.
Because sometimes they be... Like,
I mean, they're all self-inflicted, so whatever's up there is on me. I would say IG, that's my favorite place. So
yes.
Find me on IG at Tattoo Money, which is a miracle that I got my name, but that also shows how old I am. And I was able to get Tattoo
how,
Money.
How experienced you are.
Exactly. Yeah, keep an eye out for that. I got new stuff coming. Hopefully around the time that this drops, there will be some things out, some pieces out leading up to the release of my new single and album. So,
well, here's the thing. I'm going to give you the last half of this show, that if you have something that has already been out or something that you want to tease, I'll play it at the end of this episode.
I'm going to send you something for when it release, maybe an exclusive.
Period. Perfect. Yeah. You see, that's why we do this. Well, I ask all my guests, when I'm calling us out, like, do you mind doing a quick mouth air horn with me? Because that's how I play everything out.
Yeah, what we do with the...
Exactly. 3, 2, 1. Y'all have listened to Sugar. We're going in another episode. Thank you to Tattoo Money for joining me. Thank you, my Shugs, for tuning in. Let's keep this going. Again, we are still in 2011. It is such a special time. We're talking all things Patrick, Soul Punk, Trant Wave. But thank you again to Tattoo Money. Thank me, Scardi B, for being me. And that's all I got for y'all. Bye.